webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 28th of July, 2016, broadcasting from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you today thanks to the generosity of Gospel Revolutionaries Jimmy and Carrie McCollum from the studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where with C.S. Lewis we say, atheism turns out to be too simple. If the whole universe has no meaning, we should never have found out that it has no meaning. But right now from Dover, New Hampshire, USA, we bring you more CPR of the Gospel of Peace with the pinup poster boy of the Summer Grace Conference 2016, Derek Hensel, who is just chortling in his coffee right now about the fact that I called him the pinup poster boy. How are you doing, Derek?
Yeah, I can't say that I've ever been called a poster boy before. Maybe a poster child for certain movements, of which I won't mention right now. But poster boy.
No, I think poster boy is great because there you are sitting in your car in Dover, New Hampshire, in your dressing gown at 5:30 a.m. New Hampshire time, 4:30 a.m. my time, and it looks like a pinup poster boy to me, mate.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, although I am fully dressed in today's outfit, but I'll let your imagination go where it wants to.
Oh, it will. Yeah, don't try to stop me. You don't hold me back, mate.
Who can? So how you doing, Barris?
I'm doing great, mate. I finally got in. The conference ended on Sunday morning officially. Sunday afternoon, unofficially, and I just got in last night, Tuesday night, and ended up staying over in Nashville for a night because I just didn't want to drive off the road coming home late. But I tell you what, I walked in the door, did a bit of shopping, and made use of the time in Nashville. But I walked in the door 4 o'clock yesterday, and I got to tell you, mate, there is something about the word home and the fact of home that just leaves you, oh my God, I'm home. This is wonderful.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
You had a rougher time than I did, though, because you ended up, you flew in at, 1:30 a.m. or something, and then had to get up the next day and turn around and go to work.
Yeah, I'm still lacking a full night's sleep since the last week. And then the 90-degree weather here in New Hampshire. See, now, when I lived in Atlanta, Georgia, I mean, everyone had central AC. I mean, you just couldn't. I mean, I'm sure where you are, you definitely have central AC, right?
No. We live in a tent here in Eva, Alabama.
Oh, right. Okay.
We have a little bit of soundproofing on the sides of the tent so that, we can do this, make the studio.
Right.
The Homeless Boy Choir of Alabama came down and helped us put it together. And really, it's, I feel like a rich man down here by comparison with the neighbors.
Is that the four-man tent or the six-man tent?
No, it's the family special.
The family special, okay.
Yeah, and we have full air conditioning. We got both flaps of the tent are up, and the wind's just howling through at the moment. I'm amazed you can't hear it.
Well, it's that sound dampening equipment that you've got on there. I don't know what you've done with the place, but
it's too technical for an ordinary person to understand. But
no, you're right. Yeah, it's not even. We shouldn't even go there. But so you do have full time AC down there. Whether it's flaps or central. But up here in New Hampshire, most people don't have central AC, and a lot of people don't even have even a window unit or anything. They just kind of bear it for the few weeks that it's very hot up here, and the end of July and on into August tend to be pretty hot and humid. So it even with the windows open all night, it's just it's really muggy inside the house, so it kind of affects your ability to like sleep. I've been running on coffee and whatnot.
Christian crack?
Yes, Christian crack. Okay. Exactly. So, how was the? I left at 9:30 on Sunday morning, so I didn't get to hear any of the sessions on Sunday. How did they go? How'd you guys?
Well, without you, they went so much better and a lot quicker. And
oh, I bet. It's nice to have that freedom,
mate. Sunday morning, Mike was teaching again on the Last Trump, and it was it was just great. It was excellent. Mike teaches provocatively. He likes to drop bombs. But this time it was just slow, sure, and consistent, a presentation of the things that he has had building up in him for the last year or two about this. And it was just excellent. It was terrific. I, as you know, we kind of tag on a Sunday afternoon presentation where I was going to. I talked with Vic, who is our, thank heavens we have him up there in Canada. He wanted me to share on in the afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and because I always stay over an extra day more than you guys, just so that I can get my head together to come home.
That's a good idea.
And we decided I was going to teach on the history of first century Christianity. Well, when we all got there, we realized that we all just wanted to veg out. So we just talked about how we enjoyed the seminar. We talked about people who from the past, some who were there, some who weren't there, and we just had a nice little,
visit.
Reflection. Yes, a visit. There you go. So it was good. Now, how did you enjoy yourself? This was your baptism by fire into the gospel revolution, so to speak. Tell me, just give me an overview. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I definitely enjoyed sharing the things that I've been thinking about and writing about, and the topics that I shared on, just to recap, were sort of under the umbrella of a re-renewed mind. I don't know why I have such trouble saying that. A re-renewed mind. It's, there you go. A re-renewed mind. And of course, a play on words there, play on the idea that, as a Christian, I got my mind renewed. And then as a person coming to know the gospel, my mind had become re-renewed. It's just such a great way to explain the progression of my story, especially over the past, year or so, is that you have to walk out the way that you came in. And so I spent so much time and so much effort over the past 7 years becoming familiar with different strains of Christianity and different doctrines, and I just really genuinely wanted to know all about them. And I realized that my reason for wanting to know all of this information, my reason for it was because, as I said in one of my talks, was because this information was actually tied to my very survival. I felt when I was in religion, if you will, or in certain strains of Christianity, that belief, I had to believe the right things in order to be saved. I mean, that was really the only way I could be sure. If it wasn't works-based, in other words, I had to produce certain fruit, and I had to work, I had to do certain things, conduct myself a certain way, in order to basically prove that I'm saved to myself and to others. If it wasn't about that, then it was, and God is gracious, and my works are nothing but filthy rags, then it was all about just believing in Jesus and believing the right things. And when you believe the right things, then you are saved. And So it was very important for me to know exactly what it was that I believed about every single topic, and to extensively explore and deconstruct these doctrines. I would literally take the statement of faith at my church or wherever I was, and I would go through it point by point, and I would make sure that I knew exactly what it meant. You know, the doctrine of eternal conscious punishment, or whether it was the doctrine of the Trinity or the doctrine of the Holy Spirit, or, you know, any of these major doctrinal points. And so I would go through all 10, 20, 50 points of these things and just make sure I knew, you know, exactly what I believed about it, because my belief was so tied to even my very eternal survival.
How integral was your belief to your own persona?
I was the sum total of my beliefs, not only in my own mind, but also in religion. And when I say religion, I mean, obviously, I haven't experienced all religions, and I probably ought to just take this time to just explain what I mean when I say religion. To me, religion is any system of thought or any set of principles, whether it be a moral code or an ethical code, that says you have to do to be, rather than a declaration of who you already are. Maybe that's incredibly simplistic, but to me, the gospel is a declaration of who I am, not a set of codes or standards or whatnot that says you're not there, but here's how you can get there.
I used to tell people, if you wanted to see religion in action, don't go any further than your local kennel club, your local bird fanciers club, or your local homeowners association, because you're going to see religion absolute. I mean, if you want to see, you got to do this to live here or anything like that, that's religion.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you and I could go on and on trying to find the perfect definition of religion, but
the fact is that religion occurs both inside and outside of church.
That's why I'm saying it's not specific to Christianity. It's not specific to even belief in God. There are many systems of thought or worldviews that I would consider religious and dogmatic that have nothing to do with God, that still keep people in bondage.
Politics, possibly?
Politics, absolutely. Yeah, that's a huge religion.
Hmm.
That's a huge religion. Sports, even, can be very religious activity. And when I say that, I don't always mean it in a bad way, but I mean, for the most part, I do use it in a bad way.
Well, it's not so much a negative connotation, it's just a description.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a much better, because, yeah. So anyway, the question you asked me earlier was belief tied to my own persona? Mm-hmm. And absolutely it was. And I judged not only myself, but others according to my religion, according to the religion that I had developed. And so that's how I saw myself. Saw myself through a paradigm of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Do you think you developed that religion around you, or do you think it was developed for you?
Yeah, it was definitely developed for me, because I was constantly, I was not really thinking for myself, although I was thinking, but I was thinking with other people's thoughts. So whenever I had a question about something, I would go to one of my several Christian ministry web pages that had question and answer type formats. And so it was almost like I would always, and I was always reading commentaries. You'd read, if you wanted to have a dialogue in a Christian circle about a particular scripture, you didn't really, at least in my experience, I didn't really think about it for myself. I thought about it with other people's thoughts. And I read maybe 7-8 different commentaries on it and then developed which one I thought I agreed with the most, who made the best case. So, yeah, I wasn't really, I was always just looking for what to think.
You were intelligent about it. But when you say you went for the one with the made the most sense, you're intelligent about your search, but you were still somewhat blinkered. What is the word we use here in the States? It's when you put those you put blinkers on a horse so they can only look forward.
Oh, they're blinders.
Blinders. Thank you.
So we're gonna keep doing this. I'm just gonna keep helping you with words today.
You are, because frankly, on this visit to Calgary, for the
you used up all the words you had.
I did. I've come to an end of my words, and I had a friend, and I'm pretty worried because I had a friend who felt that God gave us all a certain number of words, and when we used them up, we die.
Wow, you're getting pretty close, son.
I'm amazed I haven't passed it years back.
That's funny.
Let me just say a word for the Gospel Revolution here. Look, if you're a Facebook fan, hit the search bar in Facebook and search for Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. You'll find some very provocative comments. You'll find some great ideas, and you'll find some people you just hate. That's okay, because we don't tell you who to love and hate. We just try and share how to think, not what to think. If you want any of our hundreds of free products, go to www.gospelrevolution.com, where we have over 2,500 hours of free audio available, and fill your boots. You can download any of our years of podcasts, decades of teachings, or you can tune into the Gospel 24/7 on Gospel Revolution Radio. Thanks to Gospel Revolution executive producer Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. And just don't forget, look, we are all about the CPR of the gospel, the consistent, persistent, repetitive. Listening to the gospel is what has saved my soul, and it can save yours too. We're not suggesting that you believe what we believe. We're just saying, if you want permanent change to take an effect in your life, then you need to govern what comes into your mind. That's as simple as that. Hey, while you're up there, by the way, watch some of Jeff Robertson's videos, www.gospelrevolution.com, and just click on the radio for 24/7 Gospel Revolution Radio, or on the movies on the side panel there for any of Jeff Robertson's videos, which are darn fantastic. Now, aside from beliefs and all of that, what did you enjoy most about Calgary?
Well, you know what? I didn't get to have the brunch. I didn't get to have the brunch.
That was my plan. I said to Mike, please fly him back early so that it's enough that I have it. And I can tell I can tell people about it.
That's all I heard. And of course, the people, you know, just meeting the people, you know, names that I've heard on the PowerCast several times, just to be able to meet them in person, put a face to the name, and have great conversations. I mean, really, I didn't know what to expect going up there as far as how the schedule would be and what I would have time for or not. And but I stayed real busy. I did manage to get a nap in at one point in the afternoon. But after, you know, I had about an hour nap, and then I went down to the bar and grill down there, and I sat outside, and I happened to see one of the other ladies there. We sat and talked for, you know, good hour and a half, and just seems like I got quality time with several people there. And of course, I got to meet you for the first time in person and seeing Mike again, and it was good to just hang out with the people and hear everyone's story and where they came from and be able to share mine too. So it was just nice.
Now, you taught on, trying to remember, bondage of belief, what eternal life is, and you put a twist on that I have never heard before. The first time you were on was with Mike, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first session, I shared a story about the flight over and about this Chinese girl that I had met on the flight and the great conversation that we had. And just she was asking me what I was flying out for. And so I got an opportunity to just kind of share with her a little bit how I wanted to contribute to the human race. That's kind of what I've been saying.
That's good.
And I mean, really, that's it. For me, it's all about the relationships that I have and what I can do. Because we all have a circle of influence. I mean, every single person has a circle of influence. So I get to decide how I use that, and I've decided that how I want to use that circle of influence is in a helpful and a loving way that encourages people to be the best version of themselves and to find out who they truly are and to help people be true to themselves and how to just experience this freedom that I've experienced. And I think that, based on this whole model, if you will, of walking out the way you came in, that's how I decide how I want to share the gospel with people. If somebody's in a place where such was the case with this Chinese girl, her name was Wen Jun. She was teaching me how to say her name. And so she was already there. She did not grow up in religion, without, knowing her too well. I only have, a couple of hours to really get to know her. But we talked about some pretty deep things, which was surprising for me to just have a conversation about such things with the person you were sitting next to. But she was very intelligent and spoke good English. And so ended up not being so surprising. But, she was, I think I could just truly say she was not in bondage. And I was just asking her questions, and she was not in bondage. And she understood and I explained to her, I said, and this is one of the things I shared at Calgary. We were talking about all the, all the hate and the killing and the stuff that we see in the media and the news all around the world and why this happens. And I just shared with her, I said, you know what? I know the cure for that. I know the cure for that. And so then we just started talking about it, and she kind of innately knew this, she kind of innately understood that. Even though her and I are so different, male, female, she's literally on the other side of the earth than I am. 12-hour time difference. Couldn't be more different in some ways. And so I said, what we are is different, but who we are is the same. And she was like, yes, exactly. And then we just got into this.
Hey, say that again.
What we are is different. What we are is male, female. What we are is Scythian, Greek, barbarian, Jew, male, female. You know what I mean? That's yeah. What we are. When Paul says that there's no longer any of these things, he's describing the what we are. And he's saying, no, now this is who we are. And it's not about what we are anymore. It's about who we are.
You mean human beings as opposed to human doings?
Yes, that's another great way to say it. She understood this innately. And I said, how did you come to that understanding? I mean, were you taught that? I mean, did your parents teach you that? Did you learn that from a religion? And she didn't grow up with any religion. And she just said, no, I just know that in my heart. When we are free from judging ourselves according to what we are, that's when we begin to start to love who we are. And when we accept and start operating from a place where we understand who we are, then we can actually start to love what we are. Because when my identity is wrapped up in what I am, then there's a good likelihood that I'm not going to like what I am, because I think most religions are constantly judging us by what we are, and you know, in that paradigm, it's impossible to see beyond that. And what the gospel has done for me has shown me and taught me and brought me to a place where I'm not judging myself or anyone else according to what they are. But it's not as if that's gone anywhere. It's not as if, you know, a Jew is no longer a Jew. It's not as if you are no longer an Australian male. I mean, you're still very much that thing, but it's not the basis of your identity anymore.
Mm.
And the basis of my identity is I am one with God and one with the human race, and we are all one entity. We're all brothers and sisters. We're all very much, even more than I understand right now. I can tell intuitively that this goes beyond the words that I have to describe it, but we're so much one that it's very interesting to me how my view of myself directly correlates to how I view other people. I mean, it's the same thing. If there's something I don't like about me, guess what I get annoyed about in other people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I don't like, you know what I mean? I mean, I feel like maybe I don't have to explain it, but how I view myself is directly correlated to how I view other people. And it's all based on a paradigm. So, for me, when I stopped judging people according to what they were, which was propelled by religion, then I could see people for who they really were, which is one. And when I saw them for who they were, that's when I was actually free to love them for what they are. The gospel is a completely different paradigm. It's a completely different paradigm. It's just a whole different order of magnitude. Okay, it's just a different way altogether of seeing things. And it started to. I explained it like this, and I think I was kind of. I had posted something on Facebook yesterday, and then somebody had comment on it. And then, so I wrote up a little explanation in response to that. And in the explanation, I used the two trees in the garden as a way to explain this different paradigm altogether. And it was the first time I'd ever seen that connection. And so maybe I'll just share a little bit about that. When it comes to worldview, you can either have a dualistic paradigm, okay, in which things are good or bad or right or wrong. So you can either have a dualistic mindset or a singular, singular?
The word we've come to use, because we've got to invent the language almost, because it's not something that we've ever known before. We compare dualism with unity.
Unity. Yeah. Okay. It's a good word. So you can either have a dualistic mindset or a unified mindset. Okay. And I see this even in the two trees. You know, if you look back into the creation story, which there's just so much in that creation story, and it doesn't really matter if it's literal or allegorical or whatever. If it is true, it doesn't take away the allegorical value of it. If it's not true, it still doesn't take away from the allegorical, because these things happened to teach us, and we know that these things happened as a way to help us learn. So But if you look at the two trees, I think the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that Adam or the first humanity partook of is representative of religion. It's representative of self-righteousness. It says, I am going to take the knowledge of what is good and what is bad, this dualistic thinking, and then I am going to set up laws in my heart, and I'm going to self-righteously determine what is good and what is bad, and I will live by that. And within that paradigm is this division. I mean, you have to divide things. I mean, you can't. There's absolutely no way you can exist in that paradigm and also have a unified thought, at least in my opinion, because you're constantly, you've set up a law, okay? You've set up a law in your heart. There is a law in your heart by which you judge things.
And the moment you set up a law, then perforce, there are those who keep the law and those who don't keep the law.
Exactly right. So that paradigm, it causes separation and it creates division amongst others in your community, but perhaps between you and God, between you and other people, but also within your own soul. Okay? And I don't want to go too far off topic, but I'm exploring the idea that Satan is the persona, or that voice that is in your head, the persona of somebody, the persona in the conscience of somebody who's under the law. Okay, so that's the voice of Satan is this voice that is accusing you. It's the Satan is the accuser of the brethren, and he's the one, if you will, quote unquote, the Satan is the voice of accusation. But where does the voice come from?
I've met a few female Satans, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, I'm sure you have.
Oh, that's that was a wild crack. Oh,
I'm sure you have. So anyway, I don't want to get too far off topic, but it creates this accusational voice in you, because if you've ever been under the law, or if you've ever been in religion, then you've got a voice in you that is judging you. And I remember that being in my conscience all the time. And I was constantly fighting against it. So you can either have a dualistic mindset, okay, which is the partaking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Okay, it causes you to be self-righteous. It creates division. But then there's also the other tree, the tree of life. Okay, it's not the tree of life and something else. It's just the tree of life. It's just, there's one thing. And when you eat of the tree of life, okay, things are not judged according to a standard. Things just are. Okay, one is a doing tree, the other is a being tree. And of course, we're not talking about each individual eating from the tree. Adam ate from one, Christ ate from the other, if you will. And so this is not necessarily something that I'm not saying that salvation or belief or anything like that is equivalent to us individually eating from the tree of life as a requirement unto salvation. Jesus ate from the tree of life and it was imputed to us all. It's done. There's nothing you absolutely have to do. But just in comparing the two worldviews or the two, major paradigms, I don't view things. I don't view things anymore in light of good and bad. They just are. They just are. And there's such freedom in that. But do I still make judgments? Absolutely. I make judgments, but I make judgments based on love and unity. So I'm not judging between, oh, that's right and that's wrong, and therefore I shouldn't do it. Because in order to say that, I have to have some type of law or code by which I myself am being judged.
Or so I guess that's right and that's wrong, and I shouldn't think it.
And you shouldn't think it either. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And that's the same as Jesus did. You know, even if you think it, you know, you're a criminal. You're breaking the law. So I don't make judgments according to that anymore. I make judgments according to what unifies and what is loving. Although that's very, you know, what is loving is very subjective. But to me, love is an expression of unity.
When you said you make judgments on the basis of what unifies, and also it just came to my mind there, what dignifies, because you cannot. You cannot be in unity with anyone without dignifying them.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you're recognizing them as having value, and you're lifting that up,
and equal value to yourself in that respect.
Yeah, yeah. Although dignify does start with the prefix di, so I don't know what's that. I don't know what that means.
it comes from the Greek, hey, do you dig me?
Oh, hey, do you dig me? Yeah, that word, yeah. Uh-huh. But,
you're a millennial. You had to think about that for a moment. Sorry.
No, so now I make judgments according to unity and love and dignificationism.
Dignificationalizationalism.
Dignificationalizationalism, okay?
Get it right.
Sorry. So now I realize that the decisions that I make in my circle of influence have consequences. And if I can use my judgment and wisdom and to see those consequences through and think about the decisions that I make, if they violate this principle of equality and unity, in which case that's an expression of love, if they violate that, then I just, from the bottom of my heart, I don't want to make those decisions, because I have no desire to ever violate love and unity. But you see, if my belief system is my, and this is another thing I talked about in Calgary, but if my belief system is my foundation for truth, for ultimate truth, then my belief system can actually override love and unity. Even if I feel deep down, which I do believe every human in their heart, through the Holy Spirit, if you will, understands this gospel deep down, just as this Chinese girl did. She wasn't taught it, she just knew it. She knew love and unity deep down. But the thing is, if my foundation for truth is my belief system, then my belief system will actually override that. And I will actually make decisions that violate love and unity on the basis of my belief system, because my belief system is true. My religion is true. But what the gospel has done for me is shown me that it's not my belief system that is the foundation for truth. I'm not saying I don't have a belief system. I do. But what is the foundation for truth for me is love and unity, again. So even if I hold a belief, or if I am of a particular religious persuasion, which I even feel free to do that. If I want to become a Catholic, fine. If there's some reason I like Catholicism in the future, I feel the freedom to do that. And people are free to be Buddhist or whatever. People are free to do that. But in my mind, now understanding the gospel, my foundation for truth is completely different. Now it's this unity. Now it's this love. There's no division or separation in my heart. So I couldn't, so that will always override my belief system. So I could never, I don't want to violate. My belief system would never, unity and love wouldn't allow me to violate those things through a belief system. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. Does that mean you've run out of words?
No, I think I just got to the end of my point. I just wanted to make sure.
I don't want you to run out of words. You might die.
Oh, true. It would be much too soon. But yeah, I wanted if you can understand something, then I'm pretty sure most other people can. So I just wanted to make sure it made sense.
Oh, you're so sweet. I was going down a bunny trail.
That wasn't a compliment, though. But anyway.
I choose to believe that you choose the best for me, including compliments.
Well, I know the way you like your compliments.
Oh, don't tell everyone, please. That was just one single encounter in a hotel room in Calgary. No, I was going down a bunny trail of my own in my mind, and that was, and I don't ask me what you said that triggered this in me, but it did, and that was that the Western capitalist, I'm trying to avoid the term American, the Western capitalist work ethic was. It all came from one man, John Calvin. And I don't know what took me there. I just know I went there.
Well, I know my days of studying Calvinism were very much based on judgments and dividing. And, or, you know, as creating division and all of these things. And always in my heart, I knew that, like deep down, I knew the gospel. But when I came to Christianity and I had a conviction that this was the truth, and that I basically had to get on board with these things, you know, with all these doctrines of that are just fairly inconsistent, and frankly doctrines that just don't match up with others, a lot of cognitive dissonance. But I just kind of had to take them as they were because, again, my belief system at the time was my foundation for truth. So
explain to our family cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance. So you've got, you know, cognitive just basically meaning thinking, your cognition, your thinking process, and then dissonance is a audio term or an oral term meaning. Basically, two notes, if you will, that don't harmonize with each other. You know, there are certain frequencies that work well together, and others that just create this. You know, it almost hurts your head when you hear it. There's discord there, and so cognitive dissonance is basically like two thoughts in your mind or two viewpoints that you hold in your mind that don't harmonize with each other, that don't match up, but yet you still hold them to be true.
Now, how is what you're describing any different than the paradox that Jesus is all man and Jesus is all God? I mean, is that not cognitive dissonance?
I don't know, because to me, the way I understand paradox is something that are paradoxes is kind of something that can be viewed. It almost forces me a paradox almost forces me out of my paradigm of, I can't think of another para word, but A paradox, forces me out of my paradigm of dualism in a way, because it's like I have to, I don't know, maybe paradoxes can actually be held in tension, whereas cognitive dissonances, there's in any paradigm, there's no way to synthesize these two. They're just...
Well, actually, the paradox, I like what you're saying, a paradox may be two concomitant existential truths that can be held in tension, whereas cognitive dissonance is the mind saying... screaming in a vacuum. How can this be?
There's just no way. Yeah, because it's, I mean, it's like a paradox to me, like something paradoxical is just two things that are held in tension together that do have a synthesis, whereas cognitive dissonance are two things that that are held in tension with each other that don't have a synthesis.
Interesting.
I don't know if I'm right about that. I really don't. At the same time, because I know that there are probably many paradoxical concepts that I have in my mind, but when I ascend an order of magnitude and see it from a different perspective, those two paradoxical positions have a synthesis when I ascend to a different order of magnitude.
So what I hear you saying is that even with the best of intentions, even in unity as opposed to dualism, there are still layers of information that we may not have yet accessed, and often due to no fault of our own, or anyone else's for that matter, we just haven't accessed a higher level of information that would expose the synthesis of those seeming mental problems or philosophical problems. So I guess it comes back down to what my mate Bill and I were talking about in his truck outside Right Road Ministries in Murfrees in Laverne, and that was, we're all on a journey, and it is what it is.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, honestly. I mean, do things happen for a reason, Barris? I mean, does everything happen for a reason? So you get into a plane crash and you survive, and your belief is such that everything happens for a reason, and you're the only survivor. It may cause me to think, wow, either the universe or God has a plan for my life, and now I've got to figure out that plan, because I survived this plane crash. You know, I was gifted with this, and now I have to figure out this mysterious path that I'm supposed to be on. And, you know, that may be some bondage right there. When I was in religion, that was another thing that I was constantly doing. I was always trying to figure out the will of God for my life. I was always trying to figure out what path should I be on, Lord? What should I do? What decision should I make here? And so most of my prayer life was just about, God, what do I do next? What do you want me to do? What path should I be on? And honestly, it just kind of held me back from living, and it held me back from living. So that can be one side of it. But then the other side of it is, well, what about all the people that died? You know, what about all the people so God or the universe didn't have a plan for them, or the plan was that they would die on this plane crash, and then what for? And then you start to ponder the reasons why it could be, and, you know, well, perhaps they were never to be blessed by God, or you know, if I'm a Calvinist, then, well, they were always meant to go to hell. I mean, they were always you know, they weren't the elect, and I was the elect. So it creates division in a way. It creates an us and them mentality, and I need to do some writing on this topic. I have done some writing on this topic, but I need to renew it. I need to update some things, some thoughts on this, because I know we can go way deeper with this.
Do you think better when you're writing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do. And I'm such a visual person. If I can see it, if I can see what I'm thinking and I can write it down, then I can much easier keep track of a train of thought.
That's fascinating. And I'll tell you why, because I think better when I externalize. I think better when I hear it being said, usually out of my own mouth. So what happens to me probably doesn't happen to you, and that is I pull up at a set of lights and I'm talking to myself. And what I'm doing is I'm practicing what I'm thinking out loud to see what I think of it.
Right.
Yeah, somebody once asked Freud, Freud, how do you come up with, you know, and Freud was the philosopher that invented sex. Someone said to him, how do you come up with these ideas, these wild ideas that you come up with? And he said, oh, that's easy. I flip a coin, then I see how it turned out, and I see whether I like it or not. Well, I'm like that at the set of traffic lights. I'm talking to myself, seeing whether I like it or not, and the person in the car next to me, probably a really nice-looking person, looks across at me and says, dang, I've got to get out of this situation as fast as I can. This guy could be crazy on a whole bunch of levels. But you think better when you write. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think better when I write. And definitely when I am an external processor too. So rather than think out loud and run in circles and just confuse people, because a lot of times what I'm saying isn't necessarily a conclusion, I'm just testing it. So when I write it, I've gone through that process of externalizing it and then testing it and then knowing how I feel about it. So the drawback of if it's a drawback of, you know, talking about such a great subject like do things happen for a reason or not, is that I haven't fully externalized all my thoughts on it yet, so I really don't know how I feel about it. So it would be probably a bit of a waste of time for me to, you know, but I do have a persuasion that things just definitely don't happen for a reason, and that it is what it is. But that's not to say that the things that do happen don't give us reasons, and that's not to say that the things that happen externally can't teach us things. I mean, or it's not as if they're teaching us things. I'd say it's more we're learning things.
What is that term about confusing causality with the happening of the thing?
I don't know, but I'm interested now.
Yeah, it's a concept of
ergo propter hoc or whatever.
Nope. It is, hang on, confusing. Let's go to the Book of Knowledge. Okay. Causality versus correlation.
All right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, I'm so glad that you just told me that. I didn't, I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but I think that's exactly right. I think the whole saying things happen for a reason is confusing causality with correlation. That's a great way to say it. And, you know, I think for Christians or spiritual people, when you say something like that, it may offend their paradigm, because you know, when I was a Christian, everything that happened to me externally was because God made it, because God caused it to happen. God,
there was a cause, whether it was God or my own idiocy.
There was absolutely sin. Yeah, yeah. There was a cause, right?
And we weren't allowed. That just reminds me. I wasn't allowed to be an idiot. I wasn't allowed to be stupid. It always had to be sin.
Yeah. yeah. So that's a great. I need to do some more thinking on that. But yeah, I mean, I think just because something correlates, just because, I learned something from this situation, and even though it was a bad situation, I learned from it. Then that must mean that it was a lesson, and that must mean that a higher power wanted to teach me something. I just don't see why it has to be that way. But at the same time, I'm also not denying that there was a time in human history when God interacted with the human race externally and caused certain things. I mean, this whole concept of God's sovereignty, God was sovereign, and he sovereignly fulfilled his plan. I mean, he did it. There was, I definitely think there was a time when things happened for a reason, but now we're experiencing the reason that those things happened.
Isn't it amazing that the majority of Christianity can believe in God's sovereignty? In some way, God, I mean, no matter how limited it appears, God does things. And yet, when it comes to the idea that God did everything perfectly well, a la he redeemed the human race, he's not that sovereign.
Right, yeah. Well, exactly. There's just so many things about it that don't make sense. But so here's the thing.
And that's what you meant earlier by cognitive dissonance.
Right, I was just going to go back to that. Right, and so exactly, cognitive dissonance. So I think cognitive dissonances are those things that have no synthesis, regardless of how you look at it. But paradoxes, on the other hand, are philosophical, seemingly philosophical dissonances, but actually when you ascend to look at it differently, or ascend into a different order of magnitude, then you can actually find a synthesis. And so for me, that's what, you know, the talk that I did on eternal life, that's what I was doing. And the gospel has helped me to take a lot of these paradoxes and I don't know if everything I said about cognitive dissonance is true. I'm just thinking out loud, but certainly there were cognitive dissonances that I held, or maybe they were paradoxes that, in coming to understand the gospel, have been relieved. There has been a synthesis because I've been allowed to see things from a completely different paradigm. Here we're going full circle back around. I don't look at
it. Who allowed you?
Who allowed me?
Yeah.
I allowed me, you know, in a way. Like, I mean, because when my belief system wouldn't allow.
You gave yourself permission to think differently.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah, because I knew I was safe. Because I knew I was safe and secure, and that my eternal security wasn't based on a particular dogma at all. I was so safe and secure that I can think anything. I mean, even today, I mean, I can become a complete, staunch, militant atheist, and I still have the foundation of the gospel that would have brought me to that place. Wow. And I still feel the complete freedom to even be an atheist. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? But I can never deny, the one thing I can't deny is that the gospel is what got me there.
It is for freedom that you've been set free.
Correct.
Paul in Galatians, I think. And this is the hardest thing for religionists to except the fact that Jesus had no agenda other than to make us free. Mm-hmm. And that God has had no agenda other than to incorporate us into himself as some kind of evolved being. And regardless of who we are, where we are, what we believe, how we think, with whom we align ourselves, that doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Derek, just let me interrupt for a moment because we need to bring the family up to date with news about our pledge drive. This is our summer pledge drive. Hey, mate, we've had an interesting pledge drive. Tell us about it.
Well, actually, it's gone a little bit slowly, and actually, I would have to say a lot slowly. We really do need $1,000 in new monthly pledges. We have gotten nowhere near that, I'm afraid. And as for the one times, because we also count on those, we really haven't even gotten halfway there. We're heading to the tail end of Pledge Drive. I'm going to basically extend it through all of next week. But if you've ever thought about donating to this ministry because you like what we're doing and you like the message, and you feel it's something that you want others to hear, please help us do that. And whatever you can give per month, if it's $5 a month, $10 a month, $100 a month, $500 a month, please consider it. And you can donate online, or you can call me at 321-220-4373. But I do want to get to who has already donated so far in the pledge drive and let you know who those folks are. All right, let's start with Dale Van Sickle in Lady Lake, Florida, and our birthday boy, Pastor Ted Winslet. Today is his birthday here on the 28th of July, and he is in Decatur, Alabama, as well as his lovely wife, Pastor Pat Winslet of Decatur, Alabama, Walter Wilson of Selma, Alabama, Cookie Davy Duck of Castor, Alberta, Canada, Bob Hines of McDonough, Georgia, Bob Vacanti of Ottertail, Minnesota, Elkin Moores of Winnipeg, Minnesota, Robert Collier of Longview, Texas, Paul Havard of Cheltenham, Gloucestershire, United Kingdom, Brad and Holly Wilson of Queen Creek, Arizona, Billy Thompson in Wachuca City, Arizona, Pep Washburn in Marshfield, Wisconsin, Tom and Linda Wilby in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Anonymous in Edmonton, Alberta, Mel Martin in Gainesville, Georgia, Lee Dick in Kelowna, British Columbia, Richard and Pat Salonen in Laurium, Michigan, Pat's brother Bernie Rouse in Cadillac, Michigan, Patty Holzclaw in Lexington, Kentucky, Paul Viggers in New Milton, Hampshire, United Kingdom, Bud and Ruth Ramsey, Park River, North Dakota, Tom Tonsky in Canton, Ohio, John Newbigging in Edinburgh, Scotland, Wayne Card in London, Ontario, Danny Miniscanians in Studio City, California, Nico Vandenacker in Salford, Ontario, Donald Wynn in Las Vegas, Nevada, Wayne Lease in Ontario, Canada, and Muriel Alexandrowski in North Palm Beach, Florida. And that rounds out the list thus far. Like I said, folks, please consider us. Please consider what you can and might do to support this message, to continue this message to go out. And let's add some names to that list.
Hey, Jeff, why isn't Mike here this week?
Well, Mike is actually, I would say he's probably just arrived about an hour ago at his new home in Florida. He spent all day Monday packing up his apartment in Houston, and he's been on the road yesterday and today. So he was not available for the PowerCast this week. But isn't Derek a great fill-in for Mike Williams?
Mate, I've sometimes wondered what would happen if I did it myself. I can't even come close to the... you should have seen Derek in Calgary. He had everyone's, not panties in a twist, but he had their brains in a knot. It was wonderful to watch, because this is a man who thinks... He thinks... What I like about Derek, Jeff, is he thinks outside not just the box or the Christian box, but he even thinks outside the GR box. And while he says that the gospel is the best thing that ever happened to him and that it's a paradigm that is just so comfortable for him, he is still an outside-the-box thinker, and it just we love those people.
Oh, definitely we do. I've spent hours on the phone with Derek. I've always enjoyed our phone calls.
I know. He rings me up just after he talks to you and says, oh, my gosh, I need some relief. I've just been talking to Jeff.
Yeah, and I imagine that's true.
And I imagine that after he calls me, he then calls Mike. It's like he calls. One thing about, sorry, Derek, you're going to have to listen to this, buddy. Mike said it in Calgary, I think he said it, that Derek calls each of us to check on the other one to see if we all are in agreement.
Yeah, I know. I know he does that too. And it's as though he wants to see if the Holy Trinity of the Gospel Revolution is in complete agreement, which we are three completely different people, and we have three completely different perspectives on the very same gospel. So
there you go, Derek. We just want to make it official.
It's one gospel with three different people telling you what it means. And it's still the same gospel, but you're going to hear it three different ways.
What do you want to tell our family today, this week, mate?
Well, as usual, I enjoy my phone time with a lot of you folks. And for those of you who... We did spend some time on the phone through the pledge drive calls and everything that you weren't able to give. We totally understand, and we're grateful for your support in the past and your support in the future, and we're just grateful that you support us morally as well, and we are grateful to have you as friends. So thank you all. I know you're out there. I know you hear us. There are people I know who listen to us weekly. There are people I know who listen to us weekly who we have never heard from, and we would love to hear from you too. So drop us a line in an email. Give us a call on the phone. Let us know that you've been listening, and let us know, just like Derek picked up the phone and called me after he'd been listening, He called me back in January. He'd been listening to us for about, I think, almost 2 months. And we'd had many a long hour of conversations. And I would love to hear, we didn't know about Derek until he picked up the phone and called. Please do the same. Call us, write us, let us know you're listening.
What I love about Derek is that he listened, and the very first thing he heard was you. My video,
and it ticked him off.
Yeah, and he said, "What the hell? Oh, they are such jerks!" And then sought to disprove it, and found himself getting, dare I say it, he found himself getting sucked into honesty and honesty with himself. Now, and that's the amazing thing, Jeff. From day one, when I met you, when I met Mike and everyone else, it was not a case of, listen, you got to think like us. It was a case of just think for yourself. Just think. Be honest. Don't try. Come to an end of your desire to be accepted by any tribe because of what you believe. Just know that you're accepted by God, who's above anything that we believe.
I have a feeling when we do tick people off, I mean, that's how Mike has gotten a lot of his supporters, is because they heard him say something and it ticked them off, and they decided to prove Mike wrong. And when they set out to prove him wrong, they started thinking about this stuff for the first time from a deeper perspective and realized it did not support what they had been believing for years.
Mm. Wow. Jeff, I'm going to say goodbye, mate. And, mate, thank you very much for filling us in today.
All right. Thanks, Ferris.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. You've been listening to Derek Hensel, the pinup poster boy of the Grace Summer Conference in Calgary 2016. And I'm going to have to take almost all the rest of the day off just to think about what he's fed into my tiny little cerebral cavity. Remember that the concepts of heresy and blasphemy were invented by religion for the sole purpose of defending doctrines that could not defend themselves. Don't forget to visit www.theteacherwithin.com and order your copy of Touching Spirit, The Letters of Menominee. Have you read that yet, Derek?
No, I have not. I've heard so many good things about it, so I probably need to get my copy today.
Yeah, I reckon you should, Derek. You would enjoy it. It is such a relaxed romp through acceptance. I mean, it's just fantastic. We run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free product. This value-for-value model is the only way we feel we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel you've received real value from this podcast, then I'm asking you to seriously consider sticking your hands in your pockets and donating towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Master Jeff Robertson about how you can participate. Or just go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. Easy as pie. And remember that cash is not the only way that you can support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you would like to invite Mike to your area or any one of the Gospel Revolution band of reprobates. It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details, when, where, and why, and we will make that happen. So now, it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And good morning, Never Never Land, from Derek in New Hampshire.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. And Derek, thanks so much for being with us today. This has been terrific. Loved it, every minute of it, and loved meeting you up in Calgary, and it won't be the last time, I know it, mate. So if you prefer learning how to think, family, to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, only
better.